Penguin Random House Audio presents An Onion in My Pocket, My Life with Vegetables. This is the author, Deborah Madison. To the memory of my very different parents, each of whom made their best effort, and to my very much alive and equally different siblings. Introduction. Onions, snakes, and what matters. If there are not onions in my pockets or my purse, maybe there are shallots or some amaranth leaves or seeds collected from the garden or something else food-related. Once there was a 4-foot-long gopher snake in my purse, safekeeping for the walk home. These snakes do lower the number of those garden pests. But there was a day when there was actually an onion in my pocket because I had been cooking with my pal Dan and I had brought the onions that we needed for a pizza. There was one left over. In Spanish class, I pulled out the extra onion and put it on the desk so I could find my notes and pens, also crammed into my pockets that day. People started to laugh. To me, it was utterly normal. That's partially what it means to be a food person, that it is normal to find an onion in your pocket, or that you fly home with quarts of fragrant berries on your lap, or you stuff a bag of super long stalks of late summer rhubarb into the overhead. It's likely that when a friend visits you in your new desert home, she arrives with egg cartons in her suitcase, a ripe fig nestled into each little depression. Or that another friend arrives with an extra suitcase filled with quince. Food swirls around us. We reach out for some of it. Other times we toss something good into the swirl for others to enjoy. It's the forever potlatch of gift and exchange. I didn't always know I'd be so involved with food, and I've long tried to piece together when it first happened, when food became something good and compelling. I think it was when I was 16. My parents had gone to Europe for a sabbatical and farmed each of their 4 kids out to another family. I got to live with a couple who did not have children, who had lived many times in France, who loved food, and who knew how to cook. Living with them, I discovered that food could be good every night of the week. Given my parents' uneven temperaments and my mother's frugality, I had no idea this could be so, but it was, and it was miraculous. Cheese soufflés, chicken poached in wine with mushrooms and cream, salads from the garden, it was all so delicious, and it was all new to me. When my parents returned from their trip, they remarked on my new round face, evidence that butter and cream, pre-dinner gin and tonics, and the much better wines we drank, the plenty of very good food and drink in short, had had an effect. When people ask me when I became interested in food, I tell them it was when I discovered that food could taste good, every night of the week. These meals did change my life. The man in my temporary household was, like my father, a botanist, only his specialty was alliums, not grass. Like all botanists and food people I have known, his eyes were open to all kinds of possibilities, especially culinary ones. Over a long weekend, we took a trip to Mount Lassen. Once there, and settled into our motel, we set out on a hike with the intention of spending the day on the trail. Shortly into our walk, I noticed some funny-looking things poking out of the ground. I asked what they were, and the botanist and his wife both responded with ecstatic shouts, "Morels! They're morels!" We immediately filled our hats with them, abandoned the walk, and drove into town in search of butter and cream. We simmered the morels and cream and piled them on buttered toast for lunch. They were magnificent, and they taught me my first food rule. Break your plans in the face of something wonderful and utterly unexpected, like morels. Let this food rule take over and push you here and there as it will. you will at least come away with a memory. This event is decades old, but it remains a vivid memory. Despite this introduction to the pleasures of the table and my excitement about food tasting good, I didn't act right away. The thought, "I want to be a chef," never occurred to me. Instead, I finished high school, went to college, dropped out, got back in, changed universities, graduated, got a job, went to Japan, then became a practicing, even ordained Buddhist for about 20 years. It wasn't until I became a Zen student that I became interested in cooking and started to cook in earnest. It's supposed to be so austere, that Zen life, but people still have to eat and someone has to cook. That person became me in 1970. I've cooked for a long time, in the San Francisco Zen Center, at our monastery at Tassajara, at our farm Green Gulch, at Alice Waters Restaurant in Berkeley, Chez Panisse, at Green's, the vegetarian restaurant I opened in San Francisco, at the American Academy in Rome, at Cafe Escalera in Santa Fe, and at home when I finally got one. I lived in community until I was 40. At some point, I decided to look back, find out what matters when it comes to food, and that's what this book is about. Chapter 1, 20 Missing Years. I was 21 when I carried out a study for a professor at UC Berkeley, interviewing people who had gone from rat-infested, dark, old, dangerous Victorian buildings to what was considered to be a more enlightened concept of public housing than the monolithic high-rise apartment buildings that public housing programs usually produced. It was fascinating to go into the homes of people who were unlike anyone I knew and listen to them talk about their lives. But it was also discouraging. Despite their clean, safe, attractive new homes with nearby laundry rooms and grassy lawns for their children to play on, they were filled with complaints. They wanted bigger apartments. The laundry rooms were too far away. They wanted different playground equipment. I began to question human nature itself, and I had to ask myself if I really wanted to be a city planner. Did it make sense to work to satisfy people's wants if they'd never really be, for once and for all, satisfied? This was my big question, not what to eat. It's what ultimately drove me to the Zen Center, but so did other things. After a Japanese class, a trip to Japan, and some other events, I found the Zen Center in San Francisco. I spent nearly two decades there studying Zen Buddhism, but until recently I ignored that stretch of time, allowing those years for which most people are important startup career and family years to remain blank in my personal history. There they are, unaccounted for decades, an awkward pause that I haven't known what to do about. Should I admit to those years? Ignore them? Try to explain them? Mostly, I've been silent. I haven't talked about them. When I think of that stretch of time, I feel distance from it, partly because it was a long time ago, but also because I used to find myself regretting that I didn't go to graduate school, where I felt I could be more effective at righting the wrongs of the world. Today, there are students at the Zen Center who have gone to graduate school, gotten PhDs, and worked at interesting jobs before becoming involved with practice. But that wasn't the case when I was 21. Almost none of us had much experience in life before sitting down and crossing our legs on the round black cushion. We had been to college, maybe worked some, and that was about it. I had more experience than most, and that wasn't a lot. Still, those years were exciting ones in the culture at large, as well as a deeply vital time in my own life. It was a time of enormous upheaval and hope with the hippies, the Fillmore, Janis, and Jimmy, and Bob Marley, the Black Panthers. Not that I really was.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?